Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, and this is Connecting Faith. Ryan Thomas here at the controls, and I can't think of a better thing to do this week than to just make appointment listening at Connecting Faith, because all week long, they're on all the other talk stations. They're just going to be talking about how, you know, Peyton Manning couldn't win the big one, and it's just going to be difficult. And former Vikings fans will just have to hear about all the former Vikings players that now have Super Bowl rings.
Yeah.
So we have a great lineup this week. In fact, tomorrow, definitely going to want to listen in tomorrow. I read this book over the weekend, Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus, A Devout Muslim's Journey to Christ. And we'll meet Nabil Qureshi tomorrow, who's now with Ravi Zacharias Ministries. Amazing story.
Awesome.
I'll just look forward to that. Amy Simpson is coming back on Wednesday. Amy was on with us here a few months ago. Her book is called Troubled Minds, Mental Illness and the Church's Mission. And she has a powerful story. And Michael and Cammie Francis are going to be with us on Thursday. Michael was called the Long Island Don, which... In fact, one of the things that they were big into was sports betting, and he has some strong feelings about sports betting.
Right after
something like Super Bowl, it'll be appropriate to talk about that.
You really stack them up, Neil
and that's nothing in comparison to today's program. That just is absolutely starting at the very top this week.
So, right. Amazing.
Yeah. I thought I better try and do that because always Ron would, you know, feel insecure. No, he would. Ron Deal he's the real deal. We love having him on. He's director of Family Life Blended. It's a ministry of family life. He's authored a number of books, including The Smart Step Family, The Smart Step Dad, and Dating and the Single Parent. He's co-authored The Smart Step Mom, The Remarriage Checkup. One of his more recent books was called Dating and the Single Parent. In fact, I've got a copy of that, which we'll give away at the end of the hour, because this is going to address some questions about are you ready to date, how do you avoid big mistakes, finding lasting love, talking with the kids. We're going to talk about blended families today and single parents and dating, and it's going to be a great discussion. So, Ron, welcome back to Connecting Faith. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, Neil. It's always good to be back with you. So we're starting at the top. Huh?
We are. That's right. Yes.
I'm humbled, but I'm a little uncertain. That
okay.
You're right about
good.
That.
Well, you were rooting for the underdogs in the Super Bowl. So this will just kind of be a continuation of sort of this year. You can just root for getting through the show, and no, it'll be great.
Yeah, I really thought the Seahawks were the underdogs. I thought Denver was just going to come in and just, Peyton was going to pass right by them. And then it didn't turn out that way.
It really didn't. So, well, speaking of things not turning out, we're going to talk a little bit about single parenting and remarriage and blended families and all that. And Ron, I'm just maybe curious to know, is this something that you got into? Because you're a counselor and a conference speaker, a therapist. Is this something you sort of stumbled into just in your practice in counseling so many?
It is. And honestly, it's not my life. And I'm pretty quick to tell people that. I'm an outsider looking in. I am a family counselor, and I've also been in marriage and family ministry in local churches for 20 years and now in parachurch organizations for another close to 10 years. And I've been working with step families for a really, really, really long time. I like to think of myself as a male obstetrician, okay? I've never delivered that baby, but I do know something about the process just from talking with thousands of people, listening to their stories, doing research, and looking into the academic literature on what works and what's helpful, and just engaging with people and learning the secrets over time. And it's it's really been, that's been the foundation. And honestly, the reason I got here is because I'm just dedicated to helping marriages and families of all shapes and sizes, and want that to be a love offering back to the Lord, because I think he's working through our families. And so wanted to be able to strengthen step families for that same purpose, and then discovered once I started digging that there's some challenges there, some unique things that most marriage and family ministries never address. And so there just needed to be a concerted effort to try to help.
Hopefully we can address some of those issues today. If you're in a step-family situation, blended family, single parent, just have some questions about that or some issues that seem to come up. And hopefully as we talk this hour, there'll be something that will maybe just spark a question or two or a comment. You're welcome to join us. In fact, I want to give out the phone number right away if you'd like to just get queued up, 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. Or you can connect with us online by going to our website at myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there, and we do have a copy of Dating the Single Parent available from Ron Deal to give away here at the end of the hour. And if you'd like to just sign up for the drawing for that, this is a great resource. But Ron, one of the things, as I was looking at the book again, it sort of caught my attention. You know, we hear so much about the impact of single parents on children. But you indicate that remarriage for the sake of the kids has its own set of risks. Let's talk about that. What are you saying?
Well, as it turns out, let me put it to you this way. A lot of people talk about the impact of divorce and being raised in a single-parent family on a child. And a lot of people are very surprised to discover that adjusting to step-family life takes children longer than adjusting to single-parent life. So the transition from two-parent home to one parent dies, and now I'm in a single-parent home, or there's a divorce, and now I'm in a single-parent home, is less complex for children than is the transition into mom's getting married, and now I have a stepdad and perhaps step-siblings and step-in-law, you know, extended family. That takes longer. And that surprises a lot of people. They've never really thought about that. And part of the reason they don't think about it, Neil, and it really goes to the heart of what step family ministry and family life blended is all about, is the assumption that, oh, if we just fill the empty spot, you know, we've got a missing adult, we just need another parent figure in the home, and we will have at that point recreated what was lost, that is the nuclear family. And that assumption gets people in a lot of trouble. Single parents kind of run into their dating, through their dating experience, into a quick decision to get married because they're assuming that they're going to return their children back to the warm hearth that is the biological family. And the truth is, a step family is a family, and it can be strong and incredibly rewarding, but it's a different type of family, and there's a journey to get to the rewards. And you're not ever recreating the biological family that was lost. You're just not. You're creating a new type of family, and you have to know what it takes for it to function well, how it works, and what's different about it compared to the biological family. Otherwise, you're constantly comparing yourself to the wrong standard and feeling like a failure, and you're trying to implement what I call first family answers to second family questions.
You describe familyness versus coupleness, and how those two are so important in understanding, you know, what it means to be in a blended situation.
Yeah, and this is just a continuance of the point that we were just making. I mean, what happens is when somebody is dating, you know, they fall in love with another individual and they become a couple. And along with that then comes this dream of getting married and forming a family. And what they don't realize is that there's a separate process, just like you have to fall in love with the individual and become a couple and then a married couple. Family members have to, in effect, date, fall in love, and decide whether or not they're going to be family with one another. And just because you got married doesn't mean that they have joined that process or that they want to join that process or that their timing is your timing. I mean, that's really one of the big clinchers for a lot of couples is by the time the wedding happens, the adults are very much enthused about this family. They're motivated to build relationship and have a family of harmony. But children vary in terms of their level of motivation. They may play along and play nicely, but it doesn't mean they necessarily want to love you. It doesn't mean that they want their step-parent to be somebody who is near and dear to their heart. They could just get along, but doesn't mean they really want a deep relationship with you, whereas the adult might. And there is the tension, right? One party wants that relationship and the other party doesn't. So what do you do with that? Well, you know, one of the things that we teach step-parents is remember, this was your idea, not the kids. And so their timing is going to be different than yours. Their pace of relationship and openness to you is going to be different than yours. So you need to let them set the pace. You need to work on your familyness at a pace that's comfortable for the child. And when I say the child, that's child A. It could be different for child B and even different for child C. And so you have to just be flexible in receiving the child at a pace that's comfortable for them. Now magnify that over a lot of time, and you can develop a really wonderful relationship. But you just can't push it on them.
When you say a child, are we talking young child or adult child or both?
Great question. All the above. Mm-hmm. All the above. Here's another surprise for a lot of people. In fact, I have this conversation. I don't know how many times I've had this conversation. Somebody who is in the early 60s had a wonderful 25-year marriage and a spouse die because of cancer or something. And now turn the corner and in a new season of their life have found a new love and are getting married. And they don't even think twice that their adult children who are in their late 20s or early 30s with families of their own would have any adjustment issues at all to them getting remarried. And I quickly tell them that's not true. Your adult kids have just as many adjustments to make to this whole notion of you getting married as does a 15-year-old or a 5-year-old, because their family identity is changing. The family, you know, how anniversaries and Christmas and special days will never be the same. Now we're showing up at mom's house to celebrate Thanksgiving, and there's 30 people there that we don't even know. And so there's just so many challenges, inheritance. I used to talk to my mother every single day, and now she's got this guy in her life, and now she's spending part of her time with his adult kids, and that means she's not available to me or to my children as a grandmother. And so all of those are adjustments, loyalty issues and sadness and loss, and which means the children, no matter what age they are in a different place than the adults are, especially during those early years of the stepfamily's creation.
We're going to talk more about how do we let the kids set the pace. What does that look like? We'll get more into issues of blended families. We'll talk about the difference between blenders and crockpots and much more with Ron Deal. We'd love to have you join the conversation. Maybe just even as what you've heard in these first few minutes here has sparked a question or a comment. Or maybe just want to share a bit about your story and some of the things that you maybe wish you knew then, that you know now, or would do differently. Ron Deal is the director of Family Life Blended. It's a ministry of family life. You can find out more about that on their website, familylife.com. And Ron has authored a number of books, one that we're kind of singling in on today. I don't know if it's single is the right word, but we're talking about dating in the single parent with Ron Deal. And we invite you to join the conversation at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Get a copy of Dating the Single Parent to give away here at the end of the hour. And we'll talk more with Ron in just a minute.
Does your support to Faith Radio make a difference? We recently heard from one of our listeners. I just want to say thank you for all you have done in the lives of both my husband and me. We have listened to the station throughout our 3 years of marriage, and it has provided a great sense of support as together we are battling a challenge in our life. Thank you, good friend, for making this story possible through your generous support of Faith Radio. You can give simply and safely online at myfaithradio.com.
How does a believer end well? Here's Dr. Charles Stanley.
You end well serving the Lord. You end well with this confidence of readiness. Will you be able to say, kept the faith, finished the course, ready? Then you have no reason to fear death because you see you're living ready and God is waiting to give you His reward.
How to end well. This week on In Touch with Dr. Charles Stanley.
Hear In Touch weekdays at 2 p.m. on Faith Radio.
Well, it's 19 past the hour, and it may be that you're at a family situation where a spouse is no longer with you. And now what? As a single parent, you think, well, there are opportunities to start dating again and get into another relationship. Is it something that we want our children to have a father and mother, and want to have a full home, experience of the joys of life and married life? So we're talking about blended families today and getting great insight from Ron Deal, who is director of Family Life Blended. It's a ministry of family life. He's authored a number of books, including The Smart Step Family, The Smart Step Dad, Dating and the Single Parent. He was part of a research on the couple checkup research team, where they interviewed hundreds of thousands of people, I think, and talking about marriages and draw some great insight out of that. And we're getting some great insight from Ron today. We'd love to have you join the conversation at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Ron, we talked a little bit about blended families. Is that kind of a misnomer? I know you talk about sort of blenders and crockpots. Let's define terms a bit.
Yeah. You know, Neil, let me go back to something, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
As you were talking there, I realized maybe I left the single parents hanging with one of my answers to an earlier question. You know, single parents can do a really good job raising their kids. There's some challenges, yes. It's a heavy load, and they certainly need support and help from friends and family and a loving church around them. What I would want single parents to know is that, again, your kids can be okay. You can raise them. You can do a good job. Don't feel like you have to get married and bring a step parent into their life for them to be okay. That is a good option. And if the Lord leads you in that direction, then certainly, you know, move forward and be as smart about it as you can so that you have a healthy family environment. But the point is, you don't have to. I think that's really important, because a lot of single parents feel a lot of guilt that maybe they're not providing what their kids need by not having a partner. And the research just does not bear that out. It can be good either way for your kids. Now, back to blenders and crockpots. How do you cook a step family? It's not with a blender. The term the blended family is really a popular notion, idea, and it's used the most in the media in our culture. Although individuals tend to use terms about step parent, step child, step sibling, you know, those types of things. And sometimes people say, you know, well, step family sounds so negative, and I just assume not call one another step anything, because I want everybody to feel comfortable and safe. And so we like blended family, and that's great. Our ministry, we have entitled it Family Life Blended, because that's really what connects with a lot of people. When you get down to, yeah, but how do we live? Well, that's where I think there's some important distinctions. I've never heard a child, Neil, I've never heard a child walk up to me and say, Mr. Deal, I'd like to introduce you to my blended mom. I've never heard that one. Well, you know, the child knows this is my stepmom. It's very clear to a child who's a mom and who's a stepmom. And so sometimes adults use the term blended because that represents the heart or the wish. You know, what we want is a family where all the ingredients have blended into one family unit and everybody feels safe and comfortable and harmonious with one another. That's certainly a wonderful desire, and that's the goal. But if you force ingredients to love each other, or like each other, or go along just because you need them to, that's what blenders do, by the way, right? They have this high expectation that the ingredients are going to come together. Well, unfortunately, what that does in real life is it makes the ingredients bow their back and get stubborn and say, wait a minute. Now, I got a mom, and I like this woman as my stepmom, but I don't love her the way you want me to love her, the way you need me to love her. And so all of a sudden, the child is now resistant to that stepmom in a way that they weren't before. And that's just the adult kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And so one of the things I teach them is you cook a step family with a crock pot. Crockpots work very slow, right? When you put anything in the crock, we had some stuff yesterday at the Super Bowl game where I was celebrating with some church family. And, you know, stuff had cooked for 6 or 8 hours, and one item was 10 hours. And then it gets to the good stuff, right? And step families kind of need that same time period. They need, we know from research that they need 5 to 7 years on average of cooking time before it really, really gets good to taste.
That might be a kind of a shock to some people to think, well, 5 to 7 years? I mean, that's, I mean, a teenager would be out of the house by then.
Yeah, exactly. And so let's do the math real quick. And older teenagers and young adults who are already out of the house or maybe in college or whatever it is, they don't get to cook very fast. And some of them don't cook at all. I mean, they cook to the point that they are cordial and have a decent relationship with step-siblings or a step-parent. But do they ever form a bonded, loving, deep emotional attachment? No, they don't. But a child who's 5 or 3 or 8 has lots of time for that to develop. And so there you go. How long you cook makes a difference in each ingredient and how quickly or to what degree they even open themselves up to bonds and new relationships. It doesn't mean, yeah, and it can be discouraging, as you pointed out. And yet at the same time, there's some hope in understanding that you're normal. And a lot of people hear that and they go, oh, wow, man, goodness. Boy, I wish I'd have known that before we gotten started, right? And at the same time, they're saying, well, but what that means is we're not doing anything wrong. It's not us. The fact that we're still trying to work out relationships makes us normal. And Neil, that's the point. Yes, you're normal. So what you don't do is label yourself a failure and quit. Because honestly, that's what most people do. They just quit. But if you don't quit and you stay the course, you get there. It's much like the Israelites trying to get out of Egypt all the way to the Promised Land. The journey took a whole lot longer than they thought. But they kept going, and eventually, with God's help, they got there.
You know, you were talking about identifying, you know, this is not my blended mom. You address in the book Dating the Single Parent about what do we call each other, and that's an important conversation for parents to have with their kids and to just sort of identify terms. Talk a little bit about that.
The book walks an individual, a single parent, for example. The early part of the book talks about, hey, are you ready to date? And how do you know if you're ready? And are your kids ready to date? And how do you know if they're ready? And how do you begin that process in conversation with your children as you start dating? And then it leads the middle part of the book into, okay, so you're in a relationship and you're trying to decide whether there's green lights here or red lights. And what does that look like? And how do you know the pace and timing with your children so you don't inadvertently, you know, cause them some discomfort or pain through the process? And then the last half of the book, last 2 or 3 chapters, is about, all right, you've made a decision, you're engaged, you're getting married, now what do? How do you prepare and plan? And one of the activities in that back chapter is this thing about names. How are we going to introduce one another? What term will we use to call each other? That's really a really healthy conversation to have over dinner one night with your children. You know, hey, when Sally comes into our home and moves in with us, she's going to be your stepmom. What do you think you'd like to call her while she's here? When you guys just walking around the house doing life together, what are you going to call her? And you kind of co-create a language that feels comfortable to all the parties involved. She gets some input to that. The children get input to that. Her children get input to that. Dad gets input to that. And then you have another question. All right, when we're out in public and you're going to introduce her to your teachers at school, what term do you think you would feel comfortable using? Here's the whole point, Neil. If you communicate to a child that you have an expectation that they use a certain term of endearment, especially a term of endearment, like, hey, you're going to call her mom or mommy or mama or something that communicates a heart connection. Well, that forces the child into doing something they may or may not be comfortable with. They may have a loyalty to their biological mom that says, you know what, I just don't feel right about this. I feel guilty. I feel like I'm hurting my mom's feelings. So please don't push me into that situation. And it would, so it's much more wise for the adults to co-create what's comfortable, give the children permission to use terms that are comfortable for them, and then go with that. Now, here's what you'll discover. As you cook in the crock pot, the terms will change. So in the beginning, it's perhaps, you know, it's here's my stepmom. But then after a few months or a few years, then it's here's my mom. And that represents that developing relationship. And it's really beautiful when that happens.
We'll talk more about that developing relationship, and we'll touch on some of the maybe the red lights, yellow lights, green lights when it comes to reestablishing a new relationship. Dating the Single Parent is the book we're referencing with Ron Deal, director of Family Life Blended from Family Life Ministries You can join us if you have maybe a question. You can be anonymous, too, if you'd like. 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We'll talk more with Ron Deal in a moment. We're talking today with Ron Deal. I'm glad to connect with him here on Connecting Faith. He's director of Family Life Blended. It's a ministry of family life. Check out all the great resources they have online, familylife.com, or we'll put a link up on our website as well. Ron's marriage and family author, a conference speaker, a therapist, does dozens of national radio and TV broadcasts in the U.S. and Canada and in print and media. And we always appreciate hearing him when he's on Family Life or Focus on the Family, or just happy to have him back with us. And we talk about the Smart Step Family, one of his books, The Smart Stepdad, Dating and the Single Parent, the one that we're referencing today. He's also written, co-authored the Remarriage Checkup and The Smart Stepmom. And I know one of the things that you talk about, Ron, in the Dating the Single Parent, by the way, we'll get to some of your questions, but you're welcome to call us here at 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, and we'd love to have you joining the broadcast. But you talk a little bit about some of the red lights, yellow lights, some of the maybe the most common missteps that single parents can make when they're you know, considering getting back into a relationship.
One of them, one of the yellow lights, and by the way, let's remember what yellow lights are for. They're not for speeding up.
Okay.
Right? It's a caution light, and you're supposed to just kind of slow down and take a really good look before you proceed forward. So that's what yellow
lights
are.
Although, you know, that's if you were driving with me, you would think that was, you know, not actually the rule, but yes.
Yeah, good, time to speed up.
Good,
right?
Good reminder. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Red lights are definitely stop, yeah. All right? And if it's green light, then keep on going. And when you're dating, you know, it's good to be able to recognize the lights. Here's a yellow light a lot of single parents miss. A quick turnaround by yourself or the other person, meaning that it has not been long since the breakup or the loss of their previous relationship. I cannot tell you how many times couples find themselves 6 months into a marriage, 3 years into the marriage, going, you know what, I'm looking back now and I think I just went too fast. Not only was it too fast for you to have clarity about the relationship and really evaluate it well, but it was far too fast for your children. Here's the dynamic. Kids sometimes look and go, my dad has gone crazy. He would never let me date somebody in the manner in which he's dated. Here he is. He's spending all the time with this woman, and he's throwing himself into it. He's making a quick decision about marriage. He is just hormonal. He is off his rocker. I've heard kids say this, you know, 25-year-olds and 12-year-olds. My dad needs my help so that he can see he's made a big mistake. Now listen to that. When a child decides that dad's made a mistake about this person he's fallen in love with, then they're not going to be open to this stepmother. They're not receiving of her. They're against her. And so when they see that rapid, quick turnaround, it just sets them up to be against the relationship. Here's another quick yellow light. If you're dating somebody who is a poor parent, whether you have kids or maybe they have kids, whatever the case, but if they have kids and they are a poor parent, that's a serious yellow light. Now, a lot of people go, well, wait a minute, Ron, I'm falling in love with this person. You know, what does it matter what kind of parent they are? Well, if you're going to be the step-parent in the home with their children, and they're used to throwing their candy wrappers all over the house and underwear all over the place and never picking it up and expect the adults to serve them, then that's going to be your life. And if your children are used to having a different standard where you expect them to be responsible for their own things, and then they're looking around now living in the same house with kids who don't have to do that, then they start complaining about life being unfair. And it just ripples into all kinds of difficulties in everyday life experience. Just because you love a person doesn't mean that they're a good parent or that the combination of the family members together is necessarily going to be harmonious. You have to look at the whole picture.
Which brings up a question a caller asks. Talk about the different dynamics of remarriage after a divorce versus remarriage after the death of a spouse, both for the kids of the parent and for the parents themselves.
Yeah, it's a really great question. Here's a common one. If you've had a healthy marriage, a decent marriage relationship, and a spouse dies, then what you tend to be looking for in another spouse is a similar marriage experience. Somebody who has similar qualities and traits and an usness, if I could call it that. The dynamic of the two of you together, your usness, that's similar. It feels similar because you had a good experience with that, and so you tend to be looking for the same thing. Somebody who has been through a divorce is looking for something very different. They're looking for a relationship that is characterized as being different. You know, we handle decisions differently than that other relationship, and the way we talk about things is different, and our values are more the same because my first marriage, the values were very different. And so you have a different level of motivation. Now, here's what's funny about both of these. They're both a little blind, okay? Because the person coming in who had a spouse pass away and is now kind of looking for the same thing doesn't realize that it can never be the same thing. And they set up their spouse for comparisons, you know? Wow, I don't know. My first wife and I just didn't have fusses and arguments like you and I do. What's up? Must be your fault. You hear that? There's a blaming that takes place there. And then that new spouse feels like, man, I can't compare. I can't live up to who that other person was. You still wish they were here, not me. And that just erodes trust in the relationship. And the person who is looking for somebody very different than their first spouse doesn't realize that you were a part of the usness that didn't go so well. And you're still bringing you to this new relationship. And maybe it's not all about who this other person is. Maybe it has a lot to do with who you are. And so you're kind of blind to your own contributions to an unhealthy relationship. So there's always a blind spot, no matter where you're coming from. And that's why it's good to, date slowly, take a lot of time. Date through the eyes of your children and how it will impact them. Maybe have other people help speak into the quality of your relationship, what they see in your relationship, and really spend time with God, seeking his wisdom about moving forward.
Should you expect to be first place in sort of everyone's heart? I mean, whether it's the spouse or with, stepchildren, say, well, mm-hmm. Or is it just a sort of I wouldn't say marriage of convenience, but that you just, that it's just not going to be the same.
This one is challenging. And let's talk around it for a minute because it's just not an easy answer. I used to say, I've learned, Neil, I've learned a few things over time. I used to say, your spouse should be the first priority in your life. And what I learned is that a lot of people heard in my words, well, so you neglect your kids now. They're not important, only your spouse is. And I would have step-parents coming to me saying, my husband doesn't put me first in every single decision. Every once in a while, he listens to his children. And I'm like, well, that's in balance. Sure, that's healthy. What we're talking about here is not that, every decision is centered around the new spouse, but that this person is the most important adult in your world, and that covenant relationship really matters, and it ought to be the foundation for the new home, whether the kids are happy about that or not, to be honest. They have to learn how to get used to that. But it does not mean in any way that children move out of an importance in the biological parent's heart. I like to say it this way. The kids are still the most important children in the world to you. Your spouse is now the most important adult in the world to you. They both hold place of priority, as they should, in their rightful place. The marriage needs to be at the forefront to lead the home, but kids and what kids need and what is required of us as parents to sacrifice as we're trying to raise them in the Lord, that is also a priority. So honor one another's commitments in such a way that you can uphold both of those values. It's not either my spouse or my kids. It's both my spouse and my kids.
So it brings up a question another caller asked this question. By the way, the phone number is 877-93-FAITH. Do have a copy of Ron Deal's book, Dating the Single Parent, and we'll give that away here at the end of the hour. Or if you'd like to join in the conversation, just sign up for a copy of this great resource. You're welcome to give us a call at 877-933-2484. Caller says, just a note that it's important to be aware of your financial situation before walking into remarriage. My mother remarried after my father died, and they're both advanced in age. It's come out recently that my stepfather's financial past will affect what happens to my mother's home, namely that it'll need to be sold eventually when he needs to move into a nursing home. Is the financial part of it? I mean, we mentioned sort of parenting that, you know, and I know you've talked in the book about how few people really talk about parenting skills, but is the finances would be another important issue, wouldn't it?
It is. It really is. And actually, Dating the Single Parent references a list of questions that you can ask about money as you're trying to make decisions about your fit with this person and the decision to marry them. And it's really important to understand their financial debts, because just as this question, as this caller indicated, you know, here mom remarries later in life, and now they discover that his debt is now her debt, and it's going to affect her home and, you know, the house that's in her name. All of those things are really, really tough. And Neil, you know, here's the thing I would say to people. Not being a financial planner myself, but having spent a lot of time listening and talking to people who are, about the peculiarities of step-family finances, there's a whole lot here that people can easily miss, simply because our laws in the U.S. are really biased around marriage relationships and DNA blood relationships, children, okay? And so if you marry somebody and then divorce and then go on, you know, the financial ties often stay with the former partner or stay with the children in the bloodline, as opposed to stepchildren and a new spouse. So if you're going to provide for one another, and you really have to think through and have somebody help you make arrangements so that all the provisions are made the way you want them to be made. Because if you leave it up to probate, if you do nothing and it's just left up to our laws, oftentimes that money ends up in places you did not expect or anticipate. So you kind of have to do your homework.
It sort of surprised me. You talked in Dating the Single Parent about the value of premarital counseling and how little that gets used when we're getting into a second marriage.
Only 30% of couples will have premarital counseling, period. I think it's even smaller percentage of couples getting married and forming step families. They think, well, I've been married before. I don't need that stuff. I kind of know what marriage is all about now. Well, yeah, but you don't know what step family life is all about now. That's a whole new animal, as we said before. Only 30% of all couples will go through premarital counseling. And guess what? Those who do have a lower divorce rate by 30%. So if you knew you could do that and add to the permanence of your marriage relationship, doesn't it make sense to seek that out? It really, really does. And there are so many tools. This book, Dating in a Single Parent, as well as another book I wrote, The Remarriage Checkup, have in the back of the book a code that allows you to go online and take an online couple profile called the Couple Checkup. It's actually good for dating, engaged, married, or remarried couples. It tailors itself to your situation, gives you incredible feedback on the strength of your relationship. It's a great tool for dating couples to help them discern how much they really have in the bank with one another, so to speak. How strong is their relationship? And then married couples can take it to get an x-ray and just say, you know, here's where our strengths are and here's some things we can be working toward. You know, tools like that, sitting down with a pastor, a counselor, somebody who's a mentor couple, a step family couple who's a few years down the road who's going to mentor you. You know, those are invaluable opportunities for dating premarital couples, just because it helps to open your eyes, helps you to get smarter about what it takes to build a healthy home.
I guess the reality is that marriage is second or third time through. The percentage drops in terms of success pretty substantially, doesn't it?
It does. And Neil, this is where we need to talk about the church a little bit, because the church has done very little to be supportive to blended families. And it's not because the church doesn't care. It's that, you know, it's kind of an educational thing. A lot of church leaders just don't realize that what they're doing in premarital counseling, for example, applies to couples getting married and forming blended families, but it's only about half of what they need. There's a whole other set of topics and things to talk through. And family counselors in churches and pastoral leaders and marriage educators in churches just don't realize that there's more things that need to be talked about. And so they have to get equipped so they can turn around and equip the couples they're dealing with, which is why we at Family Life Blended have created, we now have two curriculum that are available for churches. One's a DVD set called The Smart Step Family, based on that best-selling book that I wrote, as well as another one based on the Remarriage Checkup. And that's a 13-week small group study. You know, those things are easily available now, whereas just a few years ago, you know, we didn't have any curriculum to share in the church. But now we have very solid material, research-based, biblically informed material that really makes a difference in the lives of people.
Corey, we're going to get to your question in a moment. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk more. Corey, listen to Faith 1270, has a question for us. Ron Deal is director of Family Life Blended. He's author of several books, including The Smart Step Family, The Smart Step Dad, Dating and the Single Parent, the one we've been referencing today. He's also co-authored The Smart Step Mom and The Remarriage Checkup. He mentioned those DVD series as well. It would be great resources. You can find out about all of it on their website, familylife.com. And we'll get to more questions and comments here in just a moment with Ron Deal.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey.
I think life is difficult enough, and it's really good when your day is going wrong or when your day is going right that you can either rejoice with what you're listening to or hold on to what you're listening to. And I have two small children, and it makes a difference to them. It changes my day, and it changes my life, and it strengthens my walk with the Lord, and I want to show and model that to my children.
Connecting your faith to your everyday life. Thanks for growing with us on Faith Radio.
In a brief letter to his protege, the Apostle Paul instructed Titus to teach and demonstrate sound doctrine. This week, Alistair Begg continues our study in Paul's New Testament letter. Our series in Titus is called Get It Right. Listen to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Tune in Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. on Faith Radio.
Well, we're 48 past the hour. I've got a few minutes left on today's broadcast, talking with Ron Deal, talking dating and the single parent, talking about the remarriage checkup, the smart step family, wise insight on blending families and all that goes into that. Ron is a marriage and family author, conference speaker, and therapist on the media a great deal, and we're happy to have him with us today on Connecting Faith. And Corey has a question for us, listening in Faith 1270. Corey, you're on with Ron Deal. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. I've been dating the same gal for about 2.5 years. Both of us are single parents. I have a 15-year-old son, no real relationship with his mother, had a bad relationship there. She's got a 7-year-old daughter. My role has seemed to be a lot easier. She obviously seeks me as a daddy figure. My son is searching for that, but with the resentment with his mother, there had been some tougher times.
Yeah.
How do we go about her standing in that role? He's seeking it. She wants it, but she has a fear of stepping on his toes and then regressing that relationship. So in establishing boundaries, where do we start? How do we go with that?
Yeah, great question. Let me go back to something I said earlier, a principle. Let the child set the pace. And what that means is you be very flexible. You and the woman you're dating move with intentionality toward him, toward your son, but listen to the feedback. You know, so the three of you go and hang out one night, you go to a movie, and pretty quickly you all get the vibe that your son is really uncomfortable with just being the three of you. You know, okay, so you learned something. Maybe we add a fourth person next time. Maybe we add a fifth person. But what you're not going to do is the woman you're dating is not going to be one-on-one with your son. That just feels too much, too intense, and that's uncomfortable for him. And so we listen to that. What's his pace regarding affection? You know, is he open to hugs? Does he give hugs? And if so, she should receive them and give them right back. But if not, then maybe not. Or maybe he'll kind of do the side hug thing or give her a knuckle high five or something like that that's kind of impersonal, but it's what he feels like he can do. She should meet him there. Let the child set the pace. That really pertains to authority. You know, at this point, you're still dating. I would say you just need to continue to be that person who speaks into his life, and maybe she can begin to talk about some things if he's open to her engaging in that, but she shouldn't necessarily be the one saying, no, you can't go out on Friday night, and here's why. That ought to be your job. And by the way, once you get married, that's probably going to be your job for at least a couple of years while she and he are still trying to figure out their relationship. One other thing I would give you is this. Help her, the woman you're dating, both of you, learn to be okay with hot cold from your son. What I mean by that is kids who, you know, he's got a torn relationship with his mother. He longs for it. Of course he does. His loyalty is there as it should be. And he wants more out of that relationship. And so that can create this back and forthness in his heart. So on the one hand, he's all about this woman you're dating. He enjoys her and he laughs with her and he cuts up with her and he has a good time. And 10 minutes later, he wants nothing to do with her. That is his loyalty at work. That's his guilt at work. I feel good about you as this person in my life, as the woman that makes my dad happy, and that's a problem for me, that I like you. Do you hear that? I like you, and so I feel guilty that I'm not in a close relationship with my mom because that's the one I really want. And what if mom were to find out about that? He may have some fears about her being fragile and being hurt if he likes this woman that you're dating too much. And so what that does is create in with him a hot, cold sort of response set. Don't take it personal. It's not her. You shouldn't be angry with her as if she's doing something wrong. It just is what it is. And you have to be flexible and try to meet him where he is. And over time, hopefully that tension will begin to reduce.
I assume it's probably an added challenge, too, if the former spouse has some influence or impact in the child's life as well. So then you get sort of that just adds to the conflict.
It does. And they always have an influence. I mean, even if that is a deceased parent, they have an influence. In real or imagined, they have an influence. If it's a divorced parent and another home and kind of sounds like, you know, Corey's ex-wife is distant and irresponsible and maybe unpredictable in terms of her dealings with her son, all of that just adds to the confusion, to be honest, for him. And if, for some children, that cuts one of two ways. They either can say, you know what, okay, mom is missing out on me and I'm going to be okay getting to know my stepmom and enjoying her. And for other children, they just can't give themselves permission to like their step-parent in that situation. So, again, it is what it is, and we can long and wish that that biological mom would step back into his life. That would really be the best thing, Corey, for the woman you're dating, is for his mother to come back in and be a responsible participant in his life. That would not push the stepmom out, ironically enough. It would actually make it easier for your 15-year-old to like her because he wouldn't be conflicted about his emotions. Mm-hmm. So those are delicate issues and things that a lot of times we as parents have to really think through because it just seems clear to us, you know, wow, mom's not involved, but this woman, this great woman is. How come the kids can't just accept her? Well, it's just more difficult than that for them.
Ron, say a few words about that. We live in a society that has gone down the road of cohabitation. I'm just wondering, how would you respond to someone who says, you know, that maybe there have been some yellow lights and some red lights in terms of getting into a new relationship? What then if there's not marriage there?
Yeah, you know what? I would say cohabitation is a red light. You know, for somebody who suggests that, you know, okay, we've been dating a while. Why don't we just move in with one another? That is a red light for a number of reasons, and here's why. And by the way, I'm not being quick and harsh and judgmental with this. Just hear me out, and I think you'll understand why. God's wisdom is that sexuality be held within the framework of marriage, and there's lots of reasons for that. One of them is that it becomes an expression of a covenant that already exists, but it also then supports that covenant, reinforces that covenant. We don't have time for me to go into the biology and what's happening in brain chemistry, but let me tell you, there's a whole lot that happens in sexuality within our bodies that functions as a way of supporting our covenant relationships. Now, here's the catch. Outside of marriage, it creates a bit of a blindfold so that people are unaware of really how to evaluate their relationship. They think that there's more in the bank with one another than they really have. This is in particular importance to women. If a man wants to move in with you, you need to know, ladies, that he tends to be less committed than a man who says, I want to marry you. He tends to hold on to that lower commitment level. Even if you live together for months and then slide into a marriage, he slides into a commitment that he doesn't really ever feel like he made a decision for. And if he doesn't feel that decision, then he doesn't feel like he's fully yours. And so you have just tied yourself to a man who is unsure about you. That is the last thing you want. And God knows all of this. And so he just simply says, hey, listen, trust me. You'll do a better job making decisions about marriage, and you'll have a happier marriage if you keep sexuality out of it. Don't move in with one another and just create that temptation in that relationship. Have a very clear distinction between not married and then we are married. That is what sets you up for success.
I have a minute and a half or so left, but just say a word about those who have said, you know, no, I'm not going to pursue marriage right now. You know, just give them maybe a word of encouragement or confidence, because it is tough.
It is tough, and obviously there's sexuality to be managed there, but I have a high regard, and you know, Scripture does too. You know, we forget that sometimes in the marriage and family field. Scripture has a high regard for people who remain single and dedicated to the Lord with their lives and their time and their energies, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I think of Jerry Sitzer. I don't know if you're familiar with his story, but he wrote an incredible book, A Grace Disguised, after his mother, his wife, and his daughter were all killed in a car accident at the same time. He waited 19 years before remarrying. What he did is he focused his time on raising his other children. And I think there's a tremendous amount of wisdom in that. He remained a parent. Obviously, there was tremendous tragedy, and they just had to survive those early years. And then they began to move back into life, and he remained consistent as a loving father who helped them launch into adulthood. And then, and only then, did he open himself to the possibility of a relationship, which just happened. The Lord brought somebody into his life. And his children have received her extremely well. And so after 19 years, he got remarried. I think for the season that you're in, just make decisions about what you're in now and where you feel called to be. I think there's tremendous wisdom in that, and there's a discipleship that's taking place as you give yourself to the Lord. You know, in the book, Dating and the Single Parent, I actually include what I call the dater's prayer. Let me just give it to you real quick.
Okay.
Lord, work out your kingdom agenda in me. I am yours. If you bring someone into my life who can cooperate with your will and help me to love you, then let me see that person. But if you don't bring someone into my life, let me be content with your provision and at ease in my singleness, for I am yours. That prayer puts us before the Lord first and foremost every single day. And then whatever happens, it's of the Lord.
We're out of time, but it's been a great time. Check out Ron Deal on familylife.com for more great insights on blended family.